What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast wondering how on earth we're only halfway through half term. Coming up, Pascal's late strike lifts Leeds ahead of top two clash. Frank Lampard, the managerial Cameron Jerome, Timu Pukki, Rob Earnshaw, Williams withdrawn. And in a huge blow for this podcast, there is no longer a monk in the Abbey. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Yeah, it's Wednesday for us, listener, which means we are halfway through half term. If you're battling the same thing, you have our sympathies. But we are glad to be back with you talking all things Football League. It's me, Matt, and I've got my two experts alongside me. Fresh from St Andrews is Sam Parkin. Sam, have you thawed out yet?
It was a cold one. Yeah, that was a good trip. And yeah, I still haven't really nailed down what shoes to wear. And we're nearly through winter now. So it's going to have to be on my things to do list for what, September, October 2025, to make sure I've nailed down that particular wardrobe mishap that has basically hindered my enjoyment of various football matches because I've clearly got a deficiency in that area.
Yeah, I think probably Adrian Clark, the only thing we haven't mentioned about being cold at football and the many times we've spoken about it is that for me this is the danger zone late Feb, because you feel like you're out of the woods, but there's always one game that frost bites you around the ankles.
This is true. Yeah, you think the evenings are drawing out, you think yeah, spring is on its way, and then you can get a March snowstorm, can't you? So yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Look, I got on Sam's theme, I bought a heated Gelo, I think, a year and a half ago. I haven't even charged it. What a wally. What an absolute wally. I've got heated gloves. Don't use them. So, yeah, I've got myself to blame.
All right. Look, we are going to get into lots of stuff today. We've got managerial movements. We've got a midweek roundup, big games to preview as well. But first, let me tell you that our partners, Quinbet, have an offer for you. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for more information on responsible gambling. Okay, let's get stuck in then. A couple of managerial departures since we last spoke. Both have been on the cards, I think it's fair to say. Swansea are looking for a new gaffer after Luke Williams got P45'd after a run of 7 defeats in 9 matches. Sam, he's somebody who you know. How much of this is on him and how much of it is on the club? Because he's not the first person in recent years who struggled in that particular hot seat.
Yeah, well, I think he has to take a share of the responsibility. I think the results speak for themselves, really. They've clearly not been good enough for the supporters and ultimately the hierarchy. So, yeah, absolutely can't escape criticism. But I do think the bigger picture is probably the chaos off the pitch. They've just obviously appointed, ironically, a director of football who follows Luke from Notts County in the last few days. So I think they've missed someone with the football background, if you like, in the important decision-making areas at the club for Luke to guide on. And I think that's really been evident in the transfer dealings. I think it's a squad that's hugely short of attacking options. We came into the season probably anticipating Swansea being a really good watch because of Luke Williams' Notts County side. Well, they haven't been. Defensively, the numbers were great early part of the season. That's deserted them as well for the last 2 or 3 months where they've been shipping goals for fun. But in my mind, it's going the other way. Vipotnik, Bianchini, Cullen's chipped in, I think, with 9, but you know, there's not been huge goal threat. There's not a great deal of creativity. And add to that, you lose your captain with a week or two to go in the window. I mean, that is going to have catastrophic repercussions for any team, I think, especially someone who was so important to what Swansea are about. So it's a mess. I don't know where they go from here. Thankfully for the supporters and everyone connected with Swansea, they got a nice cushion otherwise, and they got that win at Bristol City a week or so ago. Otherwise, they really would be looking over their shoulders, but I think they'll just about be okay, and it'll probably be down to a couple of 1-0s maybe at home that they can eke out and just get over the line. Luke will get another opportunity. It just might not possibly be at championship level next. It might be another one that he has to rebuild, for maybe League One level, something like that.
Got Blackburn at home on Saturday. I'm commentating on that one. In terms of possible replacements, Clarkey, Alan Sheehan's in position for the moment, caretaker for the second time. Des Buckingham, the new Alan Kirbishley, and Eric Ramsey are amongst the favourites. I had to Google Ramsey, which is awkward because it turns out he used to work for Chelsea. He's Welsh and currently in charge of Minnesota United. Saw some rumblings about Steve Cooper or Russell Martin maybe returning as well. I mean, it depends how attractive a proposition it is, isn't it? If you're doing your due diligence.
It's not attractive, is it? It's just not. You know, look at the transfer window. Yeah, one or two okay additions, but not enough. Not enough. Too many random signings, really, in recent years. Players that, you know, most supporters wouldn't have heard of that had no experience in English football. I think just too many of those in the match day squads. I've interviewed Eric Ramsey. He's a very nice guy. Young. Yeah, unbelievable.
Welsh. So that's a help.
He's what, sorry?
He's Welsh.
Yes. He's worked with the Welsh setup, actually, as an assistant with Rob Page. Yeah, he's been at Chelsea. He was part of United setup under Ten Hag. Very highly rated coach, I think. And he's been at Swansea as well in the academy. That was part of his development, working with the 21s and 18s. So I get the links. I think he's done pretty well in the MLS with Minnesota as well. He would be a worthy favourite, in my opinion. Buckingham, I think, is another good fit. I think that would make sense to me. I mean, Rob Edwards, that might be one for him to consider getting back into. I could see him at Swansea City. But outside of that, I think it'd be one of those three. That's how I view it. And I'm completely with Sam. I've got a lot of work to do. I just didn't think he quite had the players to play the football he wanted, but they didn't play it at the tempo it needed to be. Too sluggish, too slow, and they were getting caught out too often. They were losing the ball in bad areas, and it proved very costly.
Well, also to the surprise of no one, Gary Monk and Cambridge United have parted ways. One last time with feeling then, the Monk is no longer in the Abbey. Clarkey, I read you out his stats last week when we were previewing their game against Exeter, which proved to be his last in charge. The most recent that's been trotted out is one win in 13 league games, 8 points adrift from safety. I mean, it's a surprise he lasted this long. And I wonder what's next for him, because it was 4 years in between leaving Sheffield Wednesday and taking this job. You wonder if he comes back into it.
He might not. Yeah, he might not. It might be it, which is sad, isn't it? You know, you don't want anyone who wants to be a manager to be frozen out of the game, but it might be the case unless he goes into non-league, you know. Let's see. I mean, he's still a good name, isn't he? But the football was marginally better, I guess, but the results absolutely weren't. So, yeah, I wasn't surprised at all that they made this change. I mean, I remember working on their game, what feels like at the start of the winter at Reading. And they were well beaten 3-0. And I asked the Cambridge journos at the time, is he in trouble? Like, do you think he could go? And they were like, no. I don't think there's any whispers at all that he's in the remotest bit of trouble. And I was like, oh, I don't really understand that. So, yeah, look, I think they've left it a little bit too long, unfortunately. And I can't see them now securing their survival in the third tier, which is a real shame because they've worked ever so hard to get there and to stay there. But it does feel like they're heading back towards League Two. I think there are three obvious candidates up for this job. I'm sure you're going to read their names out very shortly. Let's see if I can get it right. The three that stand out to me, I haven't looked at the odds, the three that really stand out to me are Bonner, John Brady, and maybe Neil Harris. I don't know if he'd want to do it, but Neil Harris played for Cambridge City. I played against him when he was at Cambridge City back in the day. He knows the city, and I don't think he's too big time to turn down a role like that. So they're the three that kind of stand out to me.
Yeah, it'd be interesting in terms of Harris, wouldn't it, Sam? Because he had, 3 months there before he left to rejoin Millwall. So yeah, I'm not sure how well he would be welcomed.
That's true.
Yeah.
I've forgotten that.
He is in there with the runners and riders, but, you know, he's left a championship job. Is he going to want to be in League Two again next season? But his career has sort of pinged up and down the leagues, hasn't it? Is there anybody else? It feels a bit uninspired to me to say that two of the three favourites have already managed the club.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I spoke to David Livermore, Neil Harris's long-term assistant, at a game recently that I was covering. I said, oh, I'd seen Neil at a game the other day. He said he just loves it, just goes to matches all the time. And obviously we tried to put two and two together when he was at the QPR game against Luton, wasn't it? just after or just before Rob Edwards obviously departed. So I think me and Clarkey felt that that wouldn't be the worst idea in the world. So he may have ideas above going back in at Cambridge. And I think you're probably right with your sentiment there. I don't think he left in the kind of best place in terms of the supporters feeling towards him. Bonner, similar really, because, you know, despite him leaving Cambridge, not under a cloud, but during a tricky period after all the success, I'm not sure whether he'd want to go back or maybe wait for a fresh challenge. Gillingham was just not the right fit at all for Mark Bonner. So we shall see. I think another interesting thing on Cambridge is, I think it's Ben Strang, the long-time director of football. He's been there over two periods as left in the week preceding Monk leaving as well. So maybe there's a bit of a change going on there. And I think the success they had under Mark Bonner was very much playing the underdog, not having possession, kind of banking in. I think Gary Monk probably has just tried to change that a little bit, and whether that's going to be achievable at Cambridge with their resources in comparison to other teams at that level, I'm not so sure. It may take time, and it may take the patience of the hierarchy and the continuity under a new manager to maybe achieve that.
Yeah, whoever comes in, if they're appointed before the weekend, you think if they're wise, they'll sit in the stands because they've got Stockport at home on Saturday. So that would be a tough one to hit the ground running it.
Yeah, I can see John Brady just sneaking in, just having a little look. Because look, if he wants to get back in, I think that is the perfect job. You know, similar size club to Northampton. If they go down, he'd be well placed, I think, to bring them back up. And obviously he would be fresh, wouldn't he, unlike the other two. So yeah, maybe he should get it.
All right, well, we shall see with regards to that. Lots going on this week in terms of midweek matchups, and we'll have a chat about some of the most significant next. A Monday night matchup in the Championship that delivered drama. It happened at Elland Road, specifically as Leeds overturned a 1-0 deficit to beat Sunderland late on. The stoppage time strike from Pascal making the difference here for the home side. Clarkie, if I can be pretty generic and cliched, this is the kind of thing that champions do, right?
yeah, it is generic and cliched, you're right. But yeah, it's also true. Big massive win, you know, because had Sunderland held on to their lead, suddenly things get interesting at the top end of the table. Now you're thinking, well, Leeds are going to do it, you know. I guess over the course of the game, they did deserve it. They played very well. Sunderland started well, obviously we know that. But Leeds came on strong, didn't they? Real pressure that they applied in that second half really knocked Sunderland onto the back foot. And yeah, the goals were coming. Obviously, Daniel Farker, a man that's been pilloried on this podcast for not having a plan B, comes up with probably the plan B of the season, doesn't he? In terms of the substitutions with Rothwell and Strout coming on to assist, two goals. You know, moving Ampadu and changing the entire central midfield. What a great substitution. You know,
he's not even allowed to celebrate it.
Which is a joke, absolute joke. But yeah, like, I just don't get me started on things like that. You know, I could be here a long time. But yeah, Daniel Farker deserves great credit because it was quite an inventive move. And obviously he made some further changes after that. So yeah, fantastic for them, for Sunderland. I don't think they should lose too much sleep over it. They gave another good account of themselves. That's, you know, Burnley away, really unlucky not to win with those two penalties saved. Unlucky probably to lose at Sheffield United as well. They're a really good team, really good. So, and I looked at the fixtures. They've got six games against bottom half sides to come at the Stadium of Light. Now, in the six they've played against bottom half teams at home, they've only dropped 2 points. So if they get 16 from 18 again, you know, they're already up to 78, and that's with a lot of other games. So I wouldn't rule them out. If others falter, they could slip into second still, Sunderland. Yeah, I thought they did pretty well considering, and they've obviously got good players to come back, haven't they, with Mundell and Tommy Watson in particular returning soon. And that might just bring Lafie into maybe a number 10 position, which I think might work well for them.
And also, Sam, and we'll talk more Leeds later when we look ahead to their Monday game, but for Sunderland, you see the players kind of laid out on the Elland Road pitch in frustration and desolation at the end of the game. Obviously, that's going to happen when you're losing those circumstances. But as Clarkie says, they can still have a go at it, right? Because they've got 15 points between them and the playoff chases. So it's not like they've got to worry about not at least being in the playoffs. And if you'd offered them that at the start of the season, they would have gladly accepted it, I think.
Yeah, of course. And I think it's just a product of how the belief has grown and the confidence levels, especially with the players that have joined mid-season. I think they'll acknowledge that all of a sudden they've got a really good squad, they've got a really good manager, and they've been playing some fantastic football. I don't think they could have approached it differently, was probably my opinion. And I've seen some criticism, but I think you have to kind of be conservative at Elland Road, otherwise you can get blown apart, like we've seen in recent weeks, with that, you know, Cardiff game being a prime example. So I think it was the right way to go about it. I think the substitutions have attracted a little bit of criticism. And I thought it was interesting hearing Neil Warnock say that he would have just kept it the same, I think he said. You know, I wouldn't have made changes. We're 1-0 to the good. Trust the players to get it through rather than disrupting the side. I look at that bench, I see Chris Meppham for one on there. Just think maybe he could have gone even more conservative and maybe just put an extra centre half on there, especially with, I think, the inevitability that more balls are going to go into the box as teams get more desperate. As it proved, you can't really account for certainly the quality of the first ball from Rothwell. I mean, that watching that live, I kind of had this moment where I thought, I wish I was one of those players just attacking that. It was a delicious ball, and it got that just faintest of touches to obviously turn it over the line. Yeah, I'm not sure about Patterson on the second one, whether his position was wrong or maybe he just didn't get up off the ground to maybe get a hand on that. But yeah, brilliant from Daniel Farker. And I was kind of shouting at the TV early part of the second half thinking, God, he's got to try something different. And I wasn't thinking really about personnel. I was thinking he's got to just move the team around a little bit, or, you know, put an additional body there, or just change it up just to move Sunderland out of their shape. So he certainly had the last laugh.
Yeah, on Sunderland very quickly, they just don't have the resources, do they? They've got a good squad if everyone's fit, but yeah, they just don't. There is quite a bit of a dip, isn't there, between the starters and the subs? And maybe that's where Warnock was coming from in terms of, like, I'd have kept it. Because you don't want to unduly weaken yourselves, do you? And I think that is, I've noticed that quite a bit in the Championship this season. A lot of teams have struggled to have decent benches, and that is one thing Leeds don't have a problem with at all.
So that was the big game in the Championship. We'll whip through some League One games from midweek to Mike Dodds. Big week for him. Got his first win as Wickham boss at the third time of asking to beat Bristol Rovers 2-0 at Adams Park. Cameron Humphreys and Daniel Udo got the goals. It means the Chairboys are second, 5 points clear of Wrexham, who we shall come on to. And he's completed his coaching staff as well. Pete Shuttleworth and Tom Hounsell have come in. Shuttleworth, previously assistant to Wayne Rooney at Plymouth and DC United. Hounsell, number two to Mark Robinson at Burton, and he was interim coach for quite a long time there this season. You don't want to leave it too long, do you, Clarkie, before you get your first win? So now players and supporters alike might be more on board with the Dodds way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it'd be a relief for him. They shut out Bristol Rovers here, who'd been on an okay run. You know, picked up, I think, 7 points from 3 home games. So this is a good win. Comfortable, 2-0, well-deserved. Bristol Rovers only had 3 shots in the game. Yeah, it was. Xavier Simons was a bit of a star. Obviously, he's been on loan at various places, not least. He's on loan from Hull, isn't he? But he's been on loan at a few places before. Yeah, he adds a bit of class, I think, with, you know, in terms of passing. He was involved in the goals, and Cam Humphreys as well. He's another good technician. So you got those two that are sort of providing a bit of the guile, and then you got real pace and power down the wings and up top with Udo. So yeah, the formula is there. He doesn't need to touch it, Mike Doss. Just don't mess around with it. It's like, this is a really good team already. And for me, probably clearly the second best team in the division. A lot of the stats would tell you that. Expected goals against, the second. I think that's where they should end up now.
Dodds on for promotion. Horrible tackle from Shaq Ford at the end of that game. Deserved red card. Goodness me. Jamie Donnelly, how do I love thee? Let me count the ways. That's right, listener. We're quoting Victorian era poets on the pod now. Shout out to Elizabeth Barrett Browning and, of course, Wikipedia. Where were we? Oh, yeah, JD, as I like to call him, scored the winner as Leighton Orient came from behind to beat Wrexham in North Wales. Sam, great win from a team that are flying. But I mean, Jamie Donnelly, he can ping a ball in the most aesthetically pleasing way I have seen from a League One footballer in many a year.
Yeah, terrific technique. Different type of goal to the one that he's not going to get or didn't get against Manchester City. despite it being a thing of beauty. But last night, yeah, brilliant one to control coming out of the sky. Difficult, not, I was going to say, an equally good goal, but another very good goal from Charlie Kelman, obviously, the other one in this game. Rich vein of form, both of these players. And I'll give you a statistic that I've nicked from somewhere, and I've done a little bit of high quality maths this morning, adding on those 3 points. Leyton Orient have now got the most points in any division since Boxing Day, 28. So they are the form side in the country in any division. Leeds 27, if you're interested. And I just had a little look at those two players in particular this morning, and you can trace their start of this run and their improved form from the previous game, 21st of December, 6 goals, 5 assists for Donnelly, 6 goals, 2 assists for Kelman, who's up to 14 for the season now. So I think those two, probably a topic of conversation, a frequent topic of conversation over Richie Welland's tenure, really, at Leyton Orient. Really good team, really aesthetically pleasing, good manager, not an abundance of goal scorers. All of a sudden, they got two lads at the top end of the pitch, complement each other really well, and they're on an unbelievable run. Wrexham, 4 defeats in 8. Back-to-back at home, best home record in the division. Lost at home to Stevenage and Leyton Orient in consecutive games. So a little bit of a worry for Phil Parkinson, and interesting that Sam Smith and Rodriguez have gone straight in the team after that business in January. Smith is off the mark, but yeah, Fletcher, Marriott on the bench last night. Mullen not available at the moment. I'm not sure if he's injured, but yeah,
no Elliot Lee either, which is a big miss for them, isn't he? Had a car crash coming back from a game last week.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Yeah, just, so a few problems for them, and a bit of a gap developing between them and Wickham.
Yeah, it looks like the playoffs. They could go to Wembley twice, couldn't they, Wrexham this season? Obviously, they got the semi-final of the Virtue Trophy, it's called now, to come against Peterborough, which you probably expect them to win. Just on Orient, by the way, also the best pressing side in the division. Phil Parkinson, after this game, talked about their energy and how difficult they made it for Wrexham. Well, yeah, they've won the ball inside the final third the most times in League One. So, you know, those two forward players play a part in that, don't they? So they're hardworking as well as very good.
Those two might well be in the playoffs at the end of the season. Lincoln City, though, might have left it too late to make a charge. A 3-0 win at Mansfield, enjoyable for them nonetheless. The Stags' sorry form continues, though. 3 horrible goals conceded here, including one straight from a corner from one of their old players in Sam Klukas that had to sting in particular. Nigel Clough said afterwards, "At the moment, we cannot see where the next point comes from. Staying in this league for the first time in 35 years will be a major success." Sam, you said last week they're probably not going to sack him. He's setting his stall out there, isn't he? He's saying, this is not an easy task for anybody. I'm doing okay. We're just on a bad run.
Yeah, and defensively, what, 9 conceded in the last 3 games? I can tell him where his next point's coming from. It came in the previous game when they drew 3-3 against Blackpool. So, yeah, I mean, I've looked at the defending and yeah, it was interesting seeing Aidan Flint left out of the starting lineup. I think last couple of games after that, horror show really for him at Leyton Orient. But the goals they conceded last night, my old teammate Christy Pym won't want to see that Klukas one back either. So that's a poor mistake from him there. And yeah, I don't see how they turn it around. I've done a little bit of reading today, and it just feels like there isn't kind of the majority that are anticipate or yearning for a change there. So I just still think that they may hang on a little bit. And I think Nigel Clough has always been very realistic about the challenge this season that it would present moving up the division. So I think there's still some relative goodwill towards him. And I think the performance against Blackpool was improved. And again, last night, despite the scoreline, there were some positives for them. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, obviously, if it continues for 2 or 3 more games without them picking up any points, then surely something's probably going to have to give.
They've got Wrexham coming to the stadium, formerly known as Field Mill, at the weekend. So that's a big game for both. Also near the foot of the table, Burton's Lazarus-like revival continues apace after they won 1-0 at Stevenage, thanks to Charlie Webster's strike. That despite playing over half an hour with 10 men and giving Borough a pen. Clarkie, I know he came in midway through the season, but if he keeps them up, Gary Bowyer's got a decent shout for being the League One manager of the year, hasn't he? I mean, they were dead and buried before. And I don't think anybody thought, oh, great, they've appointed Gary Bowyer. They'll shoot up the table now.
This is true. You do well to get past sort of Chris Davis, maybe record-breaking season.
With his £15 million striker, yeah.
Yeah, I know. But like Challoner at Stockport, Wellens at Orient, there's some good contenders, I'll give you that. But yeah, look, they've got 15 points from their last 8 matches, Burton Albion. They had 14 from their first 24. You know, that's the difference. They were superb in this game for half an hour, for the first half, really. Created a lot of good chances. I think 4 big chances they had. Didn't take any of them, but they did score from Charlie Webster, who is easily the player of the match. Oh my goodness, great goal. He made 3 chances, a couple of really good crosses in there. Made 10 ball recoveries, won 3 tackles, 2 interceptions. He won 12 duels, and he was fouled 4 times as well. He basically ran the show, Charlie Webster, so well played him. But yeah, for Stevenage, bit of a bad run, isn't it? Winless in 5, I think, now. And a few boos at the end. I think it was always going to happen if they stopped keeping clean sheets, did they have the firepower? And you know, at the moment, you know, they haven't.
Yeah, well, Adrian mentioned the Vertu Trophy. It's sort of annoying that that's a pretty acceptable name for that competition, isn't it? It was much better when it was Papa John's and Johnston's Paint, etc. Well, Birmingham are heading to Wembley for the first time in 14 years in said competition. This after Lyndon Dyke's late winner gave them a 2-1 victory against Bradford in front of no less an authority than Sam Parkin, cold toes and all. This was a game marked really by Jay Stansfield in a lot of ways, Sam, because he scored that beautiful swiveled volley, but then he ends the evening in hospital after sustaining a knee injury that could be really costly for him and Birmingham's season potentially.
Yeah, and it looked a little innocuous. I think with hindsight, it probably was a penalty, but it was the fall of Critchlow onto to the leg of Stansfield rather than the initial contact that caused the injury. So yeah, really sorry way for his evening to end. And I've seen some pictures today on X to suggest that he's moving relatively freely today. So hopefully it's not going to be too bad. And yet it looked like the first half was going to play out exactly how Bradford would have intended and wanted. They'd limited Birmingham to next to nothing. And then he lit it up with a brilliant finish. Probably Walker, the goalkeeper, could have done better with the initial delivery. But Kieran Dow popped it into Stansfield and he finished perfectly on the volley. From then on in, controversy aside from the not given penalty and then Bradford going down the other end and scoring through Bobby Poynton, Bradford were excellent. I thought they gave a great account of themselves. I thought that they turned up with a real want to go and have a go at Birmingham. Yeah, of course they had to defend, but it wasn't a conservative 11 men behind the ball. They pressed at times aggressively with 4. Patterson kind of steps on from holding midfield alongside the 2-10, Sarsavic and Poynton. Jamie Walker played up front last night, so they're really down on their numbers as well with no Andy Cook and no Kavanagh. So there were selection problems for Graham Alexander, but if they defended well in the first half, they carried a real threat in the second and probably deserved, despite the lack of possession and the lack of shots. They were very much in the game, so they probably deserved penalties given what an excellent test they gave to obviously a star-studded League One outfit as they are in Birmingham. But a bit of quality in the end, Watter with a delivery and Dykes with a brilliant header. Really exciting way for the game to end. And it was great seeing Birmingham City in its new guise, really. Not only the team on the pitch who play lovely stuff, loads to enjoy, some top quality players, but the new stand. You know, it was the fireworks, the lights. I had a little wander down the tunnel pre-match. You can see that things are really moving in the right direction and quickly, as you would anticipate. So, yeah, they're going to be promoted very, very soon. And I'd expect them with this manager, this squad of players, to add a few more to be competitive, probably in the Championship. No problem at all.
North of 27,000 at St Andrews for that one. Amazing how much interest in this competition picks up when you get to the semi-final stage, isn't it? Probably didn't have 27 there for some of their group stage games. All right, that was the midweek that was. We'll look ahead to the weekend's big games next. Coventry City and Preston North End go face to face at the CBS Arena on Saturday, both hoping to gatecrash the playoffs. City the likelier to do so, but a win for the visitors here would increase their optimism. Clarkie, when Frank Lampard took over, Coventry were 2 points above the drop. They go into this one a point off the playoffs. Is he restoring his reputation, or a really good championship level manager?
Well, he might be a good championship level manager, and there's no shame in that, is it? Is there? You know, I still don't know about him in the Premier League because I think it was a mixed bag at Chelsea and at Everton.
To an FA Cup final, qualified him for the Champions League with a transfer ban. It's not bad.
Exactly. I think there were lots of positives. I just think he's a pretty good manager. I've got to say, I did say that when he joined as well. I quietly rate him. Across the last 12 games, Coventry are fourth in the form table. Only the big three, Leeds, Sheffield and Burnley, have got more points across the last 12. So they're in playoff form, have been for a while. There's a better setup now. Players playing in their proper positions, and you know, it's a nice balance with the back three. I do think once they have one or two back, like Hadji Wright, who I think is on his way back, I do wonder whether they're going to go back to a back four, because that's what Frank usually plays, isn't it? 4-2-3-1. So this might be a needs-must situation at the moment. Sims, he'll be pleased that Sims is in good form. Could have had a hat-trick, couldn't he, at Hillsborough? A little bit unlucky not to get that. I think he's got four goals in six now for Cov. So, they're looking good. The issue here for them is that Preston are a proper bogey team. Like, a ridiculous bogey team. They've not beaten Preston, Coventry City, in the league for 17 years. Mm-hmm. Throughout history, there have been 45 games between these two clubs, and Coventry have won six. They hate playing PNE. Don't know what it is. You get these bogey teams, don't you? So, we'll have to wait and see. I think with players coming back as well, you've got Mason Clark on the bench, Sheaf, Sheaf and Grimes could be a brilliant central midfield axis, by the way, when he's fit. Hadji Wright as well coming back in. I actually fancy them. I think they will get into the playoffs. I think they'll do it now. They've got momentum and they've definitely got the squad.
Much more difficult for Preston to do that, Sam. They dominated possession, had seven more shots than Millwall on Tuesday, but had to come from behind to earn a point. They're only 6 points off, but that feels like a big missed opportunity.
Yeah, of course. And I felt that it was a really good equaliser from Emil Reese. Better second half performance, but a continuing theme, really. So many draws this season. Them and West Brom, 15 draws, far and away the most in the division. Hard to beat under Paul Heckingbottom, in particular, 3 defeats in the last 18. The only problem, 9 of those have been draws. So it's that lack of clinical element, I think. I think Osmaech and Reese are decent strikers on their day, but there's not that consistency. Frocchier is probably their best creator, but he's only chipped in with 2 goals and 3 assists to this point of the season. The strong suit at the moment is that back three. And we spoke about Porteous and Gibson coming in during the window. Add Lindsay to that. Hughes, I think, has been the other one that's been part of the back three in recent games. And they've shipped 1 goal in those 3 fixtures since Porteous and Gibson have been together. And Gibson looks like a really, really top quality signing. So defensively, very good. They were excellent at Norwich last time out and they've been struggling on the road. It's now 3 wins in 7 after they didn't win any of the initial 9 away games of the campaign. So they're a much better fettle going away. I just feel it's a squad that still needs quite a lot of surgery. And I think having stabilised them this year, Paul Heckingbottom, I would expect a lot of ins and outs next summer and them to probably be maybe dark horses next year. When you think of Paul Heckingbottom, you know, I'm only talking playoffs here, but you know, having had this season to maybe have a look at things and obviously, you know, make them a lot more stable than they were early part of the season, it could be exciting times. But this year, you know, at the moment they are where they should be. You know, they're an average championship team. And completely agree with Clarkie. You look at the teams outside the playoffs, Coventry are the team that you would go for above any team else at the moment.
Sam mentions Milutin Osmaic there, accused last week by Burnley's Hannibal of racially abusing him during the 0-0 draw. Preston have said Osmaic has strongly refuted the claim, but obviously if it's proven, he'll be looking at another lengthy ban. The Championship is going big on Monday Night Football of late. Doesn't get any larger than the top two tussling as leaders Leeds go to Bramall Lane to take on a Sheffield United side who would be level on points with them were it not for their deduction. United have won 4 on the spin and 7 of their last 8 in the league. They've got a pretty miserly defence as well, Clarky. This, I was going to say this is set up to be a great game, but that means it'll be 0-0. But this might be good.
Could be good. Hopefully we'll be good. I said with confidence that Leeds Sunderland would be pretty explosive, and that was decent. This I'm slightly less confident about, but I hope I'm wrong. It's a good derby game, 2 excellent teams.
More cards than Valentine's Day.
Lots of cards. Do you know what? I think the big talking point for Blades really is who's going to play. You're going to have kind of a good indication here of what Chris Wilder regards as his best team, because obviously the toughest game of the season. He's going to want to pick his strongest team. And he's got players back, by all accounts. Hamer, Cannon and Kiefer Moore will be available. Hamer and Cannon, well, all 3 missed the game against Luton. So I'm just looking at it. I'm thinking, well, Vinny Souza plays in midfield. Who's next to him? Is it Chowdhury? Is it Peck? Let's see. And then you got Hamer or Brereton Diaz, probably down the left. You got O'Hare or Brewster, 10. You've got Cannon or Tyrese Campbell up front. You got Raksaki's probably going to start on the right. But like, really good, like 2 really good players in every position. So yeah, I do wonder whether subs might hold the key to victory. A little bit like in Leeds game the other night. Yeah, Leeds subs have scored 12 this season. Sheffield United subs have scored 7. But both benches are going to be proper strong. Tactically, obviously Wilder's made a big thing of moving away from a back 3 this year, 4-2-3-1. He wanted to sort of have a reset at Luton. Half time, he changed it to a back 3, brought on Rob Holding. So will he do that and go pragmatic, back 5 v Leeds? Might make sense. Or will he see this as a game that he wants to really sort of lay down a mark on? Will he go for it and get all those attacking players that I was talking about, or a lot of them, into the starting 11? So big decisions, I think, that lie ahead for Wilder ahead of kickoff.
So as we've mentioned, Daniel Farke won't be on the touchline for this. His booking for celebrating his team scoring a stoppage time winner against a promotion rival means that he gets a touchline ban. Sam, we've spoken a lot this season about how strong Leeds are at Elland Road, but I mean, they're not bad away from home either, are they? Haven't been beaten on the road since November, only lost 2 in the league away from home all season, 3 consecutive clean sheets. It's going to be tight, this one.
Yeah, I think, I don't really want to say it, but I think a point suits both here, and I think that'll probably be the nature of the game. I think it'll be quite cautious. I think Leeds clearly are in slightly better form in terms of the way that they're dispatching opponents. Maybe Sunderland apart, Sheffield United are creeping over the line in various games, but they've got great players and they will undoubtedly rally themselves for this game, given the locality of the opponents, but also where they sit in the table. I suppose for Leeds, it's whether he starts as he finished the other day, Daniel Farke. Will he keep Ampadu in midfield? Stroup, does he get the nod in front of him in the back line alongside Roden? We shall see. And Rothwell, obviously supplying those 2 brilliant deliveries, has given him a fair shout. I was interested to see that was just his 3rd and 4th assists of the season, because he's got terrific delivery and they've got a lot of players that want to go and attack the ball as well, Leeds, despite, you know, Sunderland actually dealing with the majority pretty well up to that point. I think that second one, it happens sometimes, the second goal at the centre-half coming from deep, when Sunderland players are all getting attracted to their own goal and getting a little bit deeper, someone can just kind of sneak in unopposed, as he did on that occasion. So they're going to be incredibly buoyant, and I loved it. I loved seeing the scenes at Elland Road, and I'm not saying it because it was Leeds in particular. I'd love that type of moment anywhere across the Championship, but I think it's great when you see Daniel Farke and the fans staying in the ground, Farke staying on the pitch, and then really celebrating what should be, you know, a moment which they look back on, which was really the catalyst to get the job done. It feels like it'll be one hell of a collapse if it doesn't happen from here.
Yeah, Another Yorkshire derby goes down in League One. It's between Rotherham United and Barnsley. I'm going to try and trump you here, Clarkie, with your head-to-head stat on Coventry Preston. Barnsley have won the last five meetings, six of the last seven. They haven't lost to Rotherham since 1982. And it's not a Rotherham side who come into this game in particularly sparkling form, is it? One win in seven against lowly Cambridge. I mean, these two of the most underwhelming teams in the league this season, I would venture.
Rotherham, definitely. I mean, Barnsley, they've had their moments. They've just been a bit hit and miss. Obviously, their home form's been pretty bad. But yeah, they've got some good wins on the road, Barnsley, and I think they could get a win here at the New York Stadium. I mean, Rotherham aren't in good nick at all. Five without a win in all comps.
Come on, stick the boot into your old pal Steve Evans.
Yeah, I'm kind of mellowing in my old age. I'm not going to make it personal. What I expect here is both teams to pummel the box. They're going to put ball after ball after ball into the danger zone. No two teams in the division put more passes or crosses into the area than Rotherham or Barnsley. Rotherham, no surprise there. I mean, they've made 60 more crosses than any other team, Rotherham. For the fullbacks, Rafferty and James, bosh. They're just going to keep getting the ball in there. And look for the head of I suppose, Anombe or, I don't know, Hugo, Clark Harris. They've actually got a lot of choice. Malik Wilkes is fit again, so he might even play up front. Yeah, we'll see. I don't think it'll be pretty from Rotherham, even though they could play a bit more, couldn't they? Because they've got Sibley now in the team at number 10, and Panzu, who's come from the Premier League, recently in the midfield. So they could play a bit more football if they want to, but I suspect they'll go pretty direct.
Barnsley haven't won for a while, Sam. Fair enough in the last two against Stockport and Huddersfield, I suppose, but also beaten by the likes of Bristol Rovers and Stevenage in recent times. And that after they've been on a run of four wins in a row. Just one of those sort of mid-table seasons for the Tykes, is it?
Yeah, falling off a bit of a cliff, it feels. If you remember, I was at the reverse fixture. It was the one which was quite comfortable for Barnsley on the night. And the Rotherham chairman was pictured looking pretty disgruntled and leaving his seat quite early. So it was a really bad night for them in the midst of a really tricky period. So, yeah, fast forward to this game, I'm really surprised the nick that Barnsley are in. But it's a bit of a new team. You know, they've changed a lot mid-season. This is their third goalkeeper. Killip left to go to Portsmouth, and Slanina as well got injured and has departed. So they're on to their third goalkeeper, which is a young loanee from Aston Villa. I spoke about the centre forward that they got in from Bastia on a pod a couple of weeks ago. He's lasted, I think, a half and then an hour of the subsequent game. So he's going to take a little bit of time to acclimatise. Neil Frugia is a wing-back from Shamrock Rovers who's in the side. They've got a lad called Jonathan Lewis from MLS who I think came off the bench the other day in that defeat against Huddersfield. So it's got a really different look to it. Waters is missing. Humphreys, who scored that brilliant goal on the night that I was just regaling, scored in the subsequent game against Cambridge. Not scored since. And I think that was maybe second week of November. So yeah, in all departments, they are struggling. Defensively, there's a real lack of pace. I've looked at some of the goals from the recent games and they're getting cut open too easily. People running beyond them. So, yeah, bit of pressure on Daryl Clark. And I didn't probably anticipate me saying this at any stage this season because I really liked them in that game at Oakwell. Liked the midfield. Keeler Dunn was an excellent player last year in League Two. John Russell scored a beauty the other day. Terrifically talented midfield player. So I am surprised by their plight. And again, because of the derby element, this is a big game for them here to, yeah, get one over Rotherham. And yeah, I suppose the saving grace, fourth best away team in the division again. It feels like we've been saying this in previous seasons. 15th best home team. Problems always, it would seem, at Oakwell.
Big game for both then, despite their positions in the table. Big game two in League Two for Carlisle. Still looking for a sparky under Mark Hughes as they aim to avoid dropping out of the EFL altogether. Their next step toward doing that comes in the form of a home game against Gillingham. Sam, we were talking about how it was important for Mike Dodds to get his first win as Wickham boss. Obviously, it's slightly easy to do that when you're taking over a team who are used to winning. But for Mark Hughes, this is a fixture he's got to earmark for 3 points, right? Because they're playing a team in no kind of form, and you're going to need to start picking up wins before too long. And this looks like the ideal opportunity to do that.
Yeah, this is a good win. This is a good game for them. I think off the back of a really impressive or much improved second half against Colchester the other day. And yeah, I think the criticism for Mike Williamson probably has been throughout his young managerial career thus far is the lack of flexibility probably within the system. Well, Mark Hughes has gone 4-2-3-1 for his first three games, half-time the other day. Went to a back three. 3-5-2, much improved second half. He made five changes by the 62nd minute, which probably showed his displeasure. I think there was three done by the start of the second half. So he has just rolled the dice, changed things up, and immediately 9 shots, 4 on target in the second half. Didn't score, granted. 3 shots, 1 on target in the first half. 54% possession in the second 45 after having 40% in the first half. So they've shown a reaction in that second period, something to build on. And I'm sure there'll be optimism going into this this Gillingham game. But they've lost 7 in 9. The only team, I suppose, that's in sight is Tranmere, potentially, whose only victory in their last 8, I think, was against Carlisle. So, yeah, if they can get something here, and then they play Barrow, I believe, live on the telly the following Thursday, they could garner a little bit of momentum. For a team that seemed to be put together with some financial clout, all of a sudden it's looking incredibly youthful. That's the only thing I will say. Quite a lot of unproven players, some of them brought in latterly, some of them obviously brought in, of course, by the previous manager. So we'll see how they get on. And with that, they lost a few. Mellish, Armstrong, some of the senior guys you probably want in there when the going gets really tough for their leadership qualities in this type of predicament, not really available to Mark Hughes. So it will be some salvage job, but I saw signs the other day, definitely.
Salvage job, what John Common was sort of brought in to do for Gillingham, wasn't it, after their season was going south, Clarkey? Lucky for him, they're 8 points above the drop with 2 games in hand on Morecambe, who are second bottom. But whatever the opposite of hitting the ground running is, that's what Coleman's done at Gillingham.
True. Yeah, yeah. They're not going to go down. But yeah, it's 11 without a win. So yeah, bit of a nightmare, if truth be told. But there is a but here, and that is, I think they might have turned a corner a little bit. They got that draw, didn't they, at Walsall? And I think that was a really, really big one for them. Robbie McKenzie scored an absolute scream, a great goal from distance. And since then, they've played well. I backed them to beat Gills last week in our predictions. Didn't quite happen. It was 0-0. But it was a 19-9 shot count in favour of Gillingham. They were pretty unlucky. You know, they should really have scored a few goals. You know, Dak had some moments. Hawkins caused problems. Nevitt is decent up front. A young lad at the back's getting a lot of plaudits. Sam Gale come through the academy. Coleman saying, you know, he's a future captain of the club and things like that. So all of a sudden, there's a little bit of feel-good factor around Gillingham, even though they haven't won for ages. So I think it's really important for them not to lose this game, because that will just set them back. So, yeah, fascinating. Set up nicely, I'd say. If Gills play as well as they did in the last game against Crewe, I think they'll go there and win.
We shall see. Lots of big games around this weekend then. Right, we're not too far off wrapping up the show, but of course we've got predictions and tweet of the week to finish things off. Last week, man, I was so close to utter glory, but it finished me with 2 points, Adrian with 1. Well done, Sam. You got a perfect score again on Reading versus Rotherham, which you predicted to be 2-1. How's that affected things then, Clarkey?
Yeah, disappointing all round for me. Anyway,
Clarkey, you're not going to bring it to the table that you wanted the 2-1. Do you remember?
Did I want it? Oh,
you
no.
You wanted the 2-1. Matt brought me into play first, didn't he? And I saw you just lean back in your chair, dejected, when you saw that Royal second one going in your mind's eye.
Oh, completely forgot all about it. Yeah. Oh, man, that's a killer. Yeah, Sam's got 49. I'm on 36. It's a big gap. And Matt, you're on 30, so I could come last here.
Yeah, a reminder that Adrian is part of a actual betting podcast as well. So it would be particularly embarrassing. Let's see if you can claw back some respectability this week. Go on then, you can have first dibs at Bristol City against Middlesbrough.
Well, I haven't had time to do any research on this, and it's not really served me in much good stead, has it? So, look, Michael Carrick's under a bit of pressure, isn't he? I think that pressure could intensify. That's where I'm heading with this. Low-scoring game. Although, do I think they're going to get beat? I don't know if I think they're going to get beat. Okay, he's not going to do himself any favours. One apiece.
I've gone 2-0 for this one. What about you, Sam?
Yeah, I'd have had 1-1. I think a bit of pressure alleviated, so I will have the 2-2.
Desmond for Sam. Sam, you can go first on Lincoln against Burton.
I am going to go for Burton to have a little wobble up. I'm going to go for Lincoln here. Yeah, I just think probably will be okay, the momentum they've got, but Lincoln after spanking Mansfield, bit of feel good back at Sintel Bank, 2-1.
Wow, okay. Listener, if you've been with us since the Totally Football League Show days, you'll have noted that that is the first time Sam has ever spoken about Burton Albion Football Club without using the prefix Terry. So, progression. It's good to see. It's a cornerstone of life. Adrian, what do you reckon? Who's going to win this game at Sintel Bank?
Who's going to win this game at Sintel Bank? Lincoln like a draw, don't they? They've had a lot. And Burton like a draw. I'm just looking at the table here. Lincoln have had 10. Burton have had 11. Only Blackpool have had more on 14. So it stinks, as Sam would say, of one apiece.
That's what I went for as well. All right, I'm going to carry on back in Bowyer. I'll say 0-1. Why not? Bromley Harrogate. I'm going to go 3-1 to Bromley based on not very much other than the league table. What about you, Sam?
1-0. Back-to-back 1-0s.
Okay. Adrian?
2-0 Bromley. Okay. That's nil, by the way. Yeah.
Right, everybody back in the home team there. Okay, before we leave you, let me remind you that our partners Quinbet have an offer for you. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for more information on responsible gambling. Tweet of the week to finish then. X of the week just doesn't sound quite as good, does it? Boy, we've been Burton Albion heavy on this show. And why not? This comes from their own Kyron Lofthouse, who is quote tweeting the account saying three massive points, the 10-minute Burton Albion hold on to secure all 3 points in Hertfordshire, blah, 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 blah. Kyron says, and I picked this basically because I think it is the archetypal tweet of the week. It's what this feature was set up for. Kyron says, unbelievable character from the lads tonight. Fist emoji, muscly arm emoji, flames emoji. Thank you to the supporters for making the trip! Exclamation mark, praise emoji. I mean, Sam, it's textbook, this, isn't it? It's everything that we've ever wanted from a footballer's post-match tweet. He's referenced the travelling supporters. He's talked about the character from the lads. The emoji use is exactly where you want it to be. I'm a big fan.
Textbook, exactly the reason I started giving people 4s out of 10. So I'll be consistent with my numbers 2 or 3 years down the line. So 4 out of 10. I think he's on loan from Barnsley. I think I mentioned him a couple of weeks ago. How far is Stevenage from Burton? Not the longest trip, is it? They were at Stevenage, weren't they?
Yeah.
Very nice of him going out of his way. Is it a couple of hours? Burger King outside Stevenage's grounds. So I'm sure the Burton Albion punters were well fed for their journey home.
I think you could do it in under two. I think it might be an hour and 40, personally. I forgot to mention, I think, in the Burton match that they did have a player sent off, and you know they had 33 minutes.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah, exactly. So they deserve that win.
And Jamie Reid hit a penalty into the Burger King.
Oh, mate, yeah, that was a shocker. These four emojis, the fist, muscly, flames and praise, that I would say they're my top four used in life. I consistently bang those out on a daily basis. So,
Adrian, what's Matt's most used?
What?
What's Matt's most used over across the last year? Come on.
I don't know.
The salute thing, isn't it?
The salute.
Yeah, yeah. I think probably broadly it's the laughing face emoji. But listen, we're all middle-aged dads. We can't pretend we don't use the thumbs up emoji an awful lot of the time. It's what we're made. You'll be disappointed with only three replies, won't he, Kyron? Brilliant performance, absolute class, and awesome, Kyron. You might be
hasn't connected, has it? As they were describing.
How many minutes of the 140 coach journey home do you think he was checking, refreshing? At least an hour.
Anyway, well done, Kyron. If you fancy following him, please do, because he's only got 1,751 followers at the moment. I'm sure he would appreciate it. And he's taken the time to put a lightning bolt in his name on his bio, albeit he doesn't yet have a header picture. So work to do. But yeah, like the classic tweet of the week there. Thank you very much to him and to you for listening. We're going to be back with another show next week. Join us for that if you can. For now, though, from Adrian, from Sam, and from me, it's goodbye.